It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. This week is, of course, Thanksgiving. It's one of the highlights of the holiday calendars of most Americans, a day that's celebrated regardless of religious tradition, though, as we'll hear, not quite universally. The true story of Thanksgiving is the subject of a trio of books by my next guest. Denise Kiernan is the author of We Gather Together, A Nation Divided, A President in Turmoil, and A Historic Campaign to Embrace Gratitude and Grace. That came out in 2020. Then last year, she adapted that work into a book for children called Giving Thanks, How Thanksgiving Became a National Holiday. A young reader version of the book has also been published this year. The books tell the story of a woman ahead of her time, a president from Illinois, and very little of pilgrims in New England. This is a conversation we first aired last year, so we're not taking calls live on the program today, but you can always let us know what you thought by emailing talk@21stshow.org. Okay, here now is my conversation with Denise Kiernan on the true origins of Thanksgiving. Denise Kiernan, welcome to the 21st Show. Thanks for taking the time to speak with us.
Thank you so much for asking me. It's great to be here.
So I want to begin. You quote Epictetus in your book. You say, "He is a wise man who does not grieve for the things which he has not, but rejoices for those which he has." And I wonder if you can just begin by talking about the place of gratitude as an essential feature of the human condition.
Gratitude was actually the linchpin that made me decide to write We Gathered Together and Giving Thanks. So a lot of times people say, "Why did you write this book?" And yes, Thanksgiving is my favorite holiday, etc. But what I became more interested in as time passed was the role that gratitude played in all of our lives. It wasn't enough for me as a writer. I do nonfiction. I do narrative nonfiction. These books are in my life for a very long time. There is a lot of research. Then there's the writing. Then there's the promotion, etc. And the decision to do a narrative nonfiction book is a pretty substantial one because you have to make sure there's enough research for you to rely on. And also, it has to be something that sort of keeps your, holds your curiosity, you know, for a while, because as I said, these books are in your life for so long. And I knew I was really interested in the way our American Thanksgiving came to be, because we're not the only ones who have Thanksgiving, which a lot of people don't know. But that wasn't enough for me. I wanted there to be some sort of present day impetus in a sense. And one of the things that I became most interested in was the role of gratitude in our lives today and in the lives of humans since they have been on this planet. And it is one of the most globally unifying ideas that I think exists. The idea that it is important, no matter what's going on, to stop and say, we're at least thankful for this part. And what's wonderful is, especially in the 20th and especially the 21st century, there is so much research to back up all of the things that we've thought for decades were good about being appreciative. There is now neurological research to support all of these things we've kind of sort of felt for a long time.
Yeah, things that the Romans knew to do and the Greeks knew to do. Yeah. And now we have journals that are being marketed to us to foster this practice.
Yeah, we say, exactly. Get your gratitude journal. Well, it could just be a piece of paper where you write thank you. It can be sending thank you notes to people. It can be waking up in your bed in the morning saying, "Hey, wow, I feel pretty okay this morning when I woke up. Thank you." Or, "Hey, this person I live my life with doesn't make me totally crazy. Thank you." All of these little things, it can help you focus on what is going well. Doesn't mean you ignore what is not going well. It doesn't mean you put blinders on and say COVID isn't terrible. You know, it just means you choose to take a little time to look at what's going well, and that really has a measurable effect on your emotional well-being, your blood pressure, so many things. And that to me was just a huge part of wanting to write about Thanksgiving.
Talk about some of the formal practices of Thanksgiving that go back to ancient times, right?
Yeah, what's interesting is the word goes back hundreds of years. I mean, so first of all, Thanksgiving is not an American creation by any stretch of the imagination. And actually a really recent touchstone to illustrate this was during Queen Elizabeth's, all the events that went around, her death, her funerary procession, all of those things, they had, as part of that, they had a Thanksgiving service in her honor. And this, I loved seeing that. I mean, I'm not celebrating anyone's death, but I mean, I love seeing that they were doing a Thanksgiving service, because this is something that goes back hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, where someone in a position of power, whether it was a cleric or it was a head of state, would say, "We are proclaiming a Thanksgiving in honor of blank." And that blank might have been a victory battle. It might have been the death of a monarch. It might have been, yay.
How great Cicero was, right?
Exactly. Or preventing, as in Cicero's case, they issued a supplicato, or a Thanksgiving in honor of Cicero, for alerting, Rome that they were about to be attacked, and, saving Rome. And so these events were often very reverential, and they were also at times for great harvests. And then next to that, for as long as humans have been around, usually celebrations around, yay, we had a great harvest. So a lot of these things, harvest festivals, Thanksgivings for governmental successes, Thanksgivings for religious reasons, all of these things sort of came together and conflated and then landed in North America, where, of course, other indigenous peoples already had their own means and celebrations of saying thank you for whatever was going well in their community and their lives.
Yeah, and you document, well, as you say, Native American ceremonies, as well as the Spanish and the French and early English settlers. And it's fascinating to me how little the word pilgrim appears in the book.
Let's
put a pin in that, because I want to come back to that aspect of the conversation.
Yeah, let's stick that pin.
Yeah. But so let's talk about Sarah Josepha Hale then. Who was she?
Sarah Josepha Hale was gratitude was a linchpin for me deciding to write this book, and so was she. So Sarah Josepha Hale was a widowed mother of five with zero formal education, who went on to become one of the most, if not the most, powerful magazine editor in the United States in the 19th century during the 1800s. She was someone who grew up in New Hampshire on a farm. Her parents, she was not allowed to go to school as her brothers were, but her parents stocked her life with books. She read just constantly and voraciously. Her parents encouraged that. Her brothers, when they would come home from school, would, share their education with her. And she had opportunity. She loved writing, married a man, David, who encouraged that in her and encouraged her to try to get published. And she did. And she sat and she wrote, as so many of us try to do, grabbing 10 minutes here, 20 minutes there, 30 minutes here. She had five kids. So, I mean, she was doing all of this, as she wrote in her own words, a lot of time, with a baby at her breast, to try and figure out how she was going to tell these stories. And she had some success. And one of those successes was a book called Northwood. And that success got her an offer to edit a magazine, the American Ladies Magazine. And that led to editing Godey's Ladies Book, which was a huge, huge trend-setting magazine in the 19th century. And so here was this woman who never got to go to school, and she actually was editing one of the most powerful magazines in the country. And she was completely dedicated to not only doing her own writing, but promoting the writing of other people, including women, and promoting ideas that she felt were important to her, including Thanksgiving, the idea of a national Thanksgiving.
A national Thanksgiving. Yeah. Some of the, you talk about, I mean, this is just to remind listeners of the timeline. I mean, she would never be able to vote in her life.
No,
she was a feminist for her era, right? Can you talk about some of her ideas?
You know, what's interesting is I view, and I leave it to readers to decide what they think of who she was with regard to, was she a feminist? Was she not a feminist? She was someone who, on paper, looking at her, ran her own magazine, had her own home. You know, she, for that time frame, hugely progressive. She also wrote about the fact that she didn't agree that women had to lose their property when they got married, and that they should be able to retain rights when they were married. She wrote about how important it was for young girls to be able to get the same kind of education as young boys did, and for women to go to college. And she wrote about Elizabeth Blackwell, the first woman to ever, you know, graduate medical school in the United States. She did all of these things, but at the same time, she distanced herself from the suffragettes. So she was this, what I find interesting about her is she was sort of this in-between kind of person. On the one hand, how she lived her life and how she shared her ideas were extremely progressive, but she did not want to be a part of, she wasn't going to, you know, go to conferences. She wasn't going to protest. She was a little more subdued when it came to actually speaking out about women's rights. But in her practice and in the way that she felt comfortable doing, I assume, she promoted various aspects of women's lives that had things in common with what the suffragettes were saying. She just didn't kind of jump on that bandwagon. And that's another reason I kind of find her interesting. She was sort of doing her own thing. You know, my husband died, I'm wearing black for the rest of my life. I'm going to write about women's rights and women's rights to education and the right for young girls to have an education, but I'm not going to be a suffragette. She was just sort of, you know, doing her thing.
If you're just joining us, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're listening back to my conversation with Denise Kiernan, the author of We Gather Together, a book about how Thanksgiving came to be celebrated as a national holiday in America. It was also adapted into children's and young adult books. Listeners, because our conversation's on tape, we're not taking calls, but you can always leave us a voicemail with your thoughts at 217-300-2121. And what I find interesting about her, she kind of reminds me of like an HGTV star. I don't know, Joanna Gaines, right? Her publication was studiously apolitical, right?
Like, Oh my God, yes.
Yeah. And so she almost, maybe she felt like she didn't want to present herself publicly that way. I don't know.
I think she was, I mean, and again, when I write in the book, the children's book and the adult book, it is anything I have proof of. If I were to think about who she might have been or what she might have valued, she did seem to be someone who just kind of didn't want to necessarily join other people's movements, in a sense. And I don't think she even realized the movements she herself was creating. And she was someone who, she lived by her own code, in a sense, I think. She talked about what mattered to her. She wrote about what mattered to her. She promoted what mattered to her. And that might have overlapped significantly with what was going on elsewhere within the women's rights movement. But that's not something she necessarily, you know, signed on to. And I find that kind of refreshing, but she was, you know, just sort of to follow her own path in a sense. I mean, obviously she used the power she had, whether or not she realized she had it, to talk about things that mattered to her. And those were things that often impacted the lives of so many other people, I mean, people in need, writers trying to get a start. There was a definite sort of giving philanthropic element to how she ran her life that I found inspiring.
So how was Thanksgiving celebrated in the newly United States of America? Let's go back.
That depended. I mean, it depended a lot on where you lived. If we're talking about the newly formed United States, we're talking, you know, late, you know, 18th century, early 19th century, late 1700s, early 1800s. You know, it was some states and territories, right, might not have practiced it at all. Some might have had one, two, three, four Thanksgivings a year, depending on who was proclaiming them. We're having a Thanksgiving, you know, for a particular battle victory. We're having a Thanksgiving because we had a good harvest. We're having a Thanksgiving in the spring because it's time for us to be penitent. A lot of Thanksgivings were not these giant indulgent, you know, fests that we think of today, but might have been take a moment to just, you know, go to a religious service and say thank you, or just take the day off from work and be with your family or your community and say thank you.
Okay, we need to take a break. We're listening back to my conversation with Denise Kiernan, the author of We Gather Together, A Nation Divided, A President in Turmoil, and A Historic Campaign to Embrace Gratitude and Grace. It explores the true origins of Thanksgiving. More to come here on The 21st Show after a short break. Stay with us. This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're listening back to my conversation with author Denise Kiernan. She's written a children's and young adult book on how Thanksgiving became a national holiday. It was based on a book she'd previously published called We Gather Together, A Nation Divided, A President in Turmoil, and A Historic Campaign to Embrace Gratitude and Grace. Because this conversation's on tape, we're not taking calls live, but you can let us know what you thought by emailing talk@21stshow.org. Before the break, we talked about the work of Sarah Josepha Hale, a publisher, a woman ahead of her time in the early to mid-1800s, who was calling for and writing presidents and pressing for this National Day of Thanks. Let's pick up the conversation from there. I was fascinated to read that it was politically polarizing in the early days. George Washington, in his first year in office, proclaims this day of reflection, and there are people throwing shade on the idea, right? We're copycatting European customs, or this should be a states' rights issue. There shouldn't be a national day. We're a nation of states, a United States.
There were a variety of presidents who Jefferson wouldn't issue Thanksgiving proclamations. And there's a really great letter that I talk about in We Gather Together, not in the children's book, but in We Gather Together, where he responds directly to a minister who wrote him about the issue. And he said, I believe in the separation of church and state. And Thanksgiving has long been very closely associated in most instances with some sort of religious practice. So I'm not doing that. John Adams wrote his friend and signer of the Declaration of Independence, Benjamin Rush, years after he left office, saying, you know, I proclaimed a day of Thanksgiving and fasting, or fasting and humiliation. That's my favorite. Yes. Hey, let's have a party. Fasting and humiliation.
John was quite the great founder, wasn't he?
John was a party animal. And he talks in this letter about how he thought his interpretation or that proclamation might have stoked various
conspiracy theories, really. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was really interesting to look at how these guys thought Thanksgiving should or should not be a part of American culture, which is why Sarah Josepha Hale is so fascinating to me, because she was like, well, this should just be one day a year for everybody and everybody should do it the same way, which is actually quite bold when you think about it. And
so how does she go about trying to make that happen?
On a personal level in her professional life, she starts writing about the idea of a national, annually occurring Thanksgiving holiday, one day every year that the entire United States, whatever that included, and other territories, would come together and have their own national Thanksgiving and eat the same things and celebrate the same things and be thankful, you know, in general, on the same day every year. And so she knows she can't really make this happen unless it is coming down from the top. So she writes governors, she writes ambassadors, she writes heads of territories, and she writes presidents. And she pleads her case to, you know, five different presidents initially before Lincoln finally said, Abraham Lincoln, during the Civil War, 1863, finally says, yes, you're right. We should have a national day of Thanksgiving and the end of November, the same day that George Washington proclaimed many, many years earlier, the first president to ever proclaim a national Thanksgiving. That's a great day to choose. So he got on board, but it wasn't a law. So she had to keep writing Lincoln. And then after Lincoln, you know, was no longer there, she had to keep writing other presidents saying, hey, it's time for the national Thanksgiving. It's time for the national Thanksgiving. And finally, everybody just sort of was thinking to themselves, oh, end of November, it's time for Thanksgiving. But it still wasn't, she never saw it made a law. She died long before Congress actually enacted Thanksgiving as a federally established holiday. That didn't happen till 1941.
Amazing. I want to pause a little bit on Lincoln because obviously we're an Illinois show. So we'll talk about his role. This is right around the time of the Gettysburg Address.
Yes. I mean, and that to me, so much of going back to what we were saying before about all the research behind how important gratitude is for one's, as we know more now, for one's mental, emotional, physical health. And when you, there is actually research that speaks to this as well, and I talk about it a little bit and we gather together. When you are able to say thank you or be grateful for good things, when things are going horribly bad, they are starting to find research that says it improves your resiliency, right? Your bounce backedness in a sense, to be able to kind of come back from really difficult times. And so to me, it was so moving that this idea of a unifying holiday around being grateful really took root during the Civil War, and that first proclamation came right before the Gettysburg Address, and Thanksgiving came right after the Gettysburg Address. The Gettysburg Address, that Lincoln delivered in Pennsylvania was very, very short, but very, very moving. One of the things that he is most remembered for. And it was commemorating a horrible, horrible loss. It was commemorating so much bloodshed and so much suffering. And to have that juxtaposition in my mind that, oh my God, things are terrible. Look at all this loss of life and all this anger and all this, you know, animosity. But a week later, we're going to say, hey, let's come together and say thank you together. We can all find things to say thank you for. Maybe it's my kids, maybe it's the weather, maybe it's my harvest, maybe who knows what it's for. But to me, that all of that coming in the time frame of the Civil War, but especially after the Gettysburg Address, which was just, you know, so powerful, and that was such a horrific, you know, battle, that to me made it very special.
you can do a reading of the Gettysburg Address as a document focusing on gratitude in a way, right? The world will little note nor long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here.
That's right.
Thanksgiving outlives Lincoln. It outlives Sarah Josepha Hale. You mentioned it finally becomes a permanent holiday in 1941.
Right after, shortly after the bombing of Pearl Harbor. And, you know, 1939, this was, I personally love that it becoming a law also happened during a horrifically painful time in world history. You know, and because it hadn't been federally established when FDR was in office during 1939, he actually moved it from the last Thursday in November to the fourth Thursday in November, because that happens every once in a while, under pressure from merchants, a merchants organization that said, hey, we, you know, our shopping season's going to be too short, move it back a week. And he gave in to them, but that screwed everybody up. And what was interesting is that everybody was so used to, oh, well, of course, Thanksgiving is the last Thursday in November. Well, it only is because we've just sort of said it was, and there's no law saying it has to be. And that year, everything just went kind of crazy. I mean, people had printed calendars, printers had printed calendars saying Thanksgiving was on this day, and it wasn't. Some states had two Thanksgivings, the last Thursday and the fourth Thursday. And I think that started to make people really think about, well, when Thanksgiving is clearly a part of our culture now, maybe we should make this official. And the fact that the resolution came in December in 1941, I mean, just right around when that happened, I thought it was very meaningful.
So Thanksgiving continues to evolve and becomes sort of now solidified as we think of it as this holiday of football and a parade and, you know, shopping. Let's come back to the Pilgrims, right? Because I think that those of us who grew up with Charlie Brown and some of those other, you know, TV specials, that's sort of our idea of how we were indoctrinated into Thanksgiving. But they don't really show up until more than 200 pages into your book.
Yeah, and that was something that I wanted to, that was on purpose as a writer. Because I thought about a lot of different ways to, you know, bring up the, you know, the pilgrims who were always lurking in the background if you, you know, grew up knowing them. But I thought, no, I don't want to talk about them till they actually come into the national picture. And the first president to ever mention pilgrims in their Thanksgiving proclamation was FDR. So that wasn't well into the 20th century until people started saying, hey, pilgrims, hey, pilgrims. I mean, Thanksgivings had always been around. They had existed in Europe. You know, I mean, this was not, you know, something we created. And so that was one of the reasons I wanted to do a children's book as well as an adult book, because I thought, well, one of the reasons every year you see all of these stories about, hey, here's what really happened, or here's what didn't happen, because we keep telling kids the wrong story. So it's not like we tell them this, you know, tale, and then when they hit AP history in high school, we go back and say, by the way, here's the real deal. We don't do that. So it's like, no, there needs to be a Thanksgiving children's book that doesn't have pilgrims in it. And it doesn't mean that pilgrims and Puritans, and those are different, didn't have an impact on American culture. But the Thanksgiving that we celebrate and the fact that we celebrate it every year at the end of November doesn't really have anything to do with any particular meal. And if you were trying to pinpoint a first Thanksgiving, you would be really, really hard pressed. And if anyone can, I really want to know.
You have like 50 candidates in the book.
So
right?
Many.
Yeah.
So many. But at the heart of it all, and again, this is what drove the adult book and the kids book, at the heart of it all is gratitude, just being thankful.
Thanksgiving is not a day for everyone to be thankful, though, right? And you do talk about that in your book, that it's a day of mourning for some Native Americans.
It is in this country. But I mean, what's interesting is you know, indigenous communities have long had festivals and celebrations and gatherings around being thankful, not just on one particular day of the year. That's, you know, a big part of, you know, various indigenous cultures, cultures all over the planet. The fact that in America now we have incorporated this kind of false pageant into our storytelling is, you know, problematic because of all of the suffering and atrocities that Indigenous people suffered when Europeans came over. So to suddenly just make them players in our, hey, we all get along, let's have a meal together, it's just not, it's not, A, number one, as someone who, it's not accurate. So number one, it's not true. So I don't even want us talking about, you know, I don't like us talking about it anymore because we keep talking about this thing that isn't true. But the other thing is to respect the fact that that has been going on, and this month and this holiday can be very painful for Native Americans because of the fact that this storytelling has gone on for so long, and it's, you know, uses the original inhabitants of this land to just kind of play a role in, you know, a particular story that's not accurate and is, you know, exploitive.
A whitewashing of history.
Absolutely, in literal and metaphorical ways, yes.
Yeah. Well, this has been a great conversation. Thank you
so much.
For taking the time to be with us.
I appreciate it.
Denise Kiernan is the author of We Gather Together, A Nation Divided, A President in Turmoil, and A Historic Campaign to Embrace Gratitude and Grace. And that's all the time we have for our program today. This evening in downtown Springfield, I'm scheduled to interview Congresswoman Nikki Budzinski, Democrat from Springfield. This is part of a listener thank you event for WUIS, NPR Illinois, our partner station in Springfield. We plan to bring you that conversation on tomorrow's show. We're going to be talking about public policy as well as her experiences as a freshman congresswoman in what has been quite an interesting year in American politics. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.